Hey, welcome to our podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can send me an email at kim@kimmunson.com as well. I am thrilled to have as our guest today, Tim McCormick. He is a candidate for district attorney for the 17th Judicial District, which is Adams and Broomfield County. Tim McCormick, it's great to have you on the podcast.
Well, good morning, Kim, and good morning to your listeners as well. Thank you very much for having me on. It's a privilege and honor. Thank you.
Well, these races, Tim McCormick, are so important. And so tell us, why are you jumping into the race?
Well, Kim, I've been a prosecutor for over 28 years, and in this particular race, I'm the most experienced prosecutor, attorney, and criminal justice candidate in the race. And I want to use my proven track record of 28 years of experience to return integrity, unbiased decision-making, and servant leadership back to the office of district attorney and work with and for the communities that that office serves. First and foremost, I think it's important to note that I'm a prosecutor. I'm not a politician. I understand that this process to get elected district attorney is political in nature, but I don't believe that the position should be. I don't believe it should be about, you know, politics, a launching pad for political careers. It really should be about experience, leadership, and who's best equipped to bring and make public safety the top priority for the residents of those counties.
You know, Tim McCormick, I'm not sure that the everyday, you know, hardworking person, they're busy with their lives, understand just how important these district attorney races are. But with all that is happening in America today, we see that law and order is so important so that people have safe communities where then they can go out and they can work, they can take care of their families, feel safe to have their kids go to a soccer game or whatever. I think that people are realizing that we've taken a lot of community safety for granted.
You know, I would, I certainly would agree with that. And I think when you look at recent events, if you will, both on a national and a local level, you see these increase in crime rates. I was aghast, shocked, really, a couple weeks ago when you saw some of those videos coming out of New York were just brazen, broad daylight. Murders were going on. And, you know, we've talked about this recipe, if you will, for crime rates increasing here and a crime wave. And quite frankly, I think you can take a look around just in the last couple of weeks and see that crime is on the rise. It's not only on the rise nationally, but here locally. I mean, you look at Denver in the last couple of weeks, they've had, I believe, 8 people killed, 10 wounded, and that's just in Denver. When you look at the surrounding communities, absolutely, the crime rate is rising, and in particular, violent crime.
Well, and that is something that should scare all of us, and that, again, is why these races are so important. So, Tim McCormick, let's jump in here just a little bit. There's been a real hot issue in Aurora, and that's regarding Elijah McClain. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. You know, there's a great deal of outrage, pain, and concern about recent incidents, not only throughout the country, but including Elijah McClain's case. And, you know, that incurred in the jurisdiction in which I'm running for district attorney, and I certainly share in that grief. You know, as a prosecutor, I represent the people, but the process of healing and making improvements in our system has to involve difficult, honest discussions about the relationship between law enforcement and the people that, you know, they swear to protect. You know, I learned about this case through the media, and I was not, at the time of this incident, I was a criminal prosecutor in Jefferson County, and I wasn't employed with the 17th Judicial District Attorney's Office. So therefore, I was neither involved in nor had any knowledge of the circumstances involving that case. So
Tim, what you're saying is the information that you got is from the media, just like everyday everyday people.
Correct. If I can use this term, I had no insider information. It was just basically gathered upon what was out there for everybody to see. You know, and I think it's easy to say, and I think it's true, that our community's relationship with law enforcement needs healing. And I've always been a supporter of transparent, independent investigations, especially in cases like these. And if I can, I'd like to just kind of explain a little bit how these come about.
Important.
usually, and the legislature has addressed this in the past, but when there's an officer-involved shooting, typically a firearm, if an officer discharges his firearm and somebody is killed as a result or injured as a result, or even if they miss or if the officer is injured, we have what in the 17th and most jurisdictions have what's called a critical incident team or a critical incident investigative team. And what these are made up of detectives and from multi-agencies within the jurisdiction, because obviously you don't want your own agency investigating their own in a situation like that. So these types of investigations are very open, transparent, and vigilant in the way they're conducted, and they're very detailed. Once that, and keep in mind that, let's say, for example, there's a jurisdiction where this happens. This team is called, and it's made up of investigators from all over. For example, Commerce City investigators, Thornton, Westminster, everybody has a part in the team. And they get together, they conduct this investigation. Once that thorough investigation is completed, that is then presented to the district attorney. And they go through the facts, the evidence, what was collected, what the statements were. And then ultimately, the district attorney reviews, you know, top to bottom, A to Z, right? The entire file, and if there's any video, body camera, that type of stuff, and then makes a decision under the applicable legal standards as to whether or not charges against an officer would be submitted. Now, the thing to understand about this is that in this particular case, in Mr. McLean's case, because there was no discharge and he died in police custody, Aurora ended up investigating the case themselves. You know, and I've talked about this before. You know, I'm all for police, meaningful police reform. Okay, I absolutely do not stand for defund the police. That's ludicrous to me, and it's hard to have any kind of meaningful conversation in regards to that. I don't stand for that. I support our law enforcement. They have a very difficult job. I think I can work with them. I have the necessary trust and relationship with them that I can work with them. I'm not a rubber stamp by any means, but they know that they can come to me and we can talk about a situation, and I'm going to do my best to help them out. But Aurora...
When you say help them out, what do you mean exactly,
well,
Tim?
Well, when I say help them out, I mean, if there's issues, you know, certainly as the chief law enforcement officer in the district, your district attorney has to manage, if you will, not only the office, but also all the multiple law enforcement agencies in the jurisdiction. So you're working with, you know, up there in particular, Westminster, Thornton, North Glen, Brighton, Federal Heights, Aurora, all the sheriff's office, all these agencies, okay, because they're the ones that do the investigation and bring it to your office for determination of charges, filing of charges, and prosecution of the case. So when I say work with them or help them out, I mean, there's all kinds of aspects. You're an advisor, whether you're going to the scene, you know, to certain homicide scenes or major crime scenes. You're not going there to, you know, put on a badge and walk in and tromp all over, right? I mean, you're going in there to advise them, you know, to make sure that the law is followed, to make sure that if there's any Fourth Amendment issues, search and seizure, that they, you know, when they complete a warrant or ask for a warrant submitted to the judge, you're there to make sure that there's sufficient factors in there, right, to establish the probable cause necessary to get the warrant. You know, another aspect is training. A lot of times DA's offices will set up trainings with their local law enforcement agencies, maybe, you know, like legislative updates, or if there's new laws that came out, to go out and explain to them, you know, what the law is, what the ramifications, what the possible penalties and charges like that. Plus, you know, a lot of times you're just when you're on call, and sometimes you just get questions about, hey, what do I do in this particular case, or you know, how should I handle this type of stuff? So it's having that working relationship with them. And my concern as I've gone through this campaign is that in discussions with a lot of people, both on the law enforcement end of things and on the other side, if you will, of things, where at best the relationship between local law enforcement and the current DA's administration is toxic. And at worst, it's non-existent. And that's unacceptable to me because, you know, to truly stand for the rule of law and public safety, you know, you have to have that working relationship. But you also have to, they have to understand that, you know, if a case of misconduct comes across a desk, as a DA, they're going to be treated just like everybody else. If they've done something wrong, then and the charges fit, whatever, you know, under the law, and the investigation indicates that, they'll be charged.
Well, and that is one of the reasons these races are so important. I'm thinking about some of the cities that are really, quote unquote, on fire. My researcher, Patty, had gone through, I don't think I have it right here in front of me, but many of these cities have been under Democrat control for decades. And I think it's important that people understand that it is the people that are elected that hire the police chief, who then, you know, sets policy for police forces. And so there's been all kinds of opportunities for meaningful police reform for all these years. Now, all of a sudden, we're seeing this movement. And I'm a bit concerned about that, Tim McCormick.
Yeah, you know, and like I started off with our conversation, I'm a prosecutor, not a politician, and unfortunately, those positions have now become almost political, very political. When you talk about, you know, chiefs of police spots and things like that, I mean, they have this line, I guess, to balance where they have to take care of their agency and support their men and women first responders in the law enforcement department, but they also have to be that kind of firewall, if you will, with city administrators. And it's true, and it's concerning. And that's why when we talk about, you know, activist DAs, when you put politics ahead of public safety, that completely defeats the purpose of your, I think, your oath of office, as well as what you're doing there. There should be no politics. Politics should be left at the courthouse steps. When you call 911, you're not asking, you know, before you send that officer, are you, you know, is he a Republican or is he a Democrat? You know, you're not calling the DA's office and saying, hey, I want to check on my case. Before I do that, is the DA that's assigned to it, is he a Democrat or is he a Republican? No. When you have that type of situation, whether it's something, you know, you have your property stolen, your car stolen, or God forbid you're assaulted or have a loved one that's killed, you don't care. You want justice. You want public safety. You want rule of law applied in terms of the victimology of that situation. So the fact that in some of these cities that we're seeing where politics has crept into this, it's concerning. I don't know, you know, if we talked a while ago about this, but down in Atlanta, Georgia, you had the officers who were involved in an officer-involved shooting of a Rayshard Brooks. That obviously resulted in significant tumult down in Atlanta. But the concern is that the DA down there, a gentleman by the name of Paul Howard, who's been a district attorney for Atlanta for a long, long time, kind of came out and had that press conference where he filed all these charges, very significant felony murder charges.
My understanding, there hadn't really been an investigation before he filed those. There hadn't been time.
Well, that's absolutely the concern, because he holds this press conference, and there's a lot of things about that were concerning, because I listened to that, and I've spoken to this before, but attorneys have a code of professional conduct that you have to abide by. And specifically, there's additional language in the code of professional responsibility that deals with prosecutors. So it's called Rule 3.6 and Rule 3.8. 3.6 is just general for attorneys involved in a litigation, and 3.8 is specific to prosecutors. And I don't have the exact quote, but the language in there is you shall not make statements, okay, that could impact, you know, jurors in the future, or basically try your case in the court of public opinion. And when I listened to that press conference of that particular DA, I was stunned, because that's just simple knowledge that you can't do that. What was even more perplexing or concerning is that shortly after that, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, who was conducting that investigation, and recall we just talked about what a critical incident team investigation does, that's what they were doing, goes ahead and makes a statement. We were unaware of this press conference. We were not involved in it. We're still conducting our investigation. We've had no conversation with the district attorney about the charges. And that's concerning, because you're basing a decision, you know, perhaps in the heat of the moment, and if I remember correctly, I read somewhere where he based it on, you know, a few videos, body-worn camera, and then three witness interviews. You know, that's not the end-all, be-all of the investigation. You know, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation does a very complex, extensive, open and transparent investigation. But then, so we get through that, and then you find out that there's other issues, right, political issues, that may have impacted this. And that's why, you know, it's concerning when you talk about activist DAs or political motivated DAs. You know, he's in a hotly contested race down there in a primary against a person who used to be in his office. So he was having issues in the polls there. Then you find out he's actually being, or was, I think, investigated by the Georgia Bureau of Investigation for prior misconduct, ethics violations, sexual harassment, misconduct, whatever, in his office. And he's currently undergoing an investigation for that as well. So it just doesn't look right. And when you talk about public trust, okay, I mean, they have to have trust in the system. In the criminal justice system, in the people that monitor to it, they have to have that public trust, and stuff like that is just makes you scratch your head, like, well, why is he doing it this way? Why didn't you wait for the investigation?
Well, in the U.S. Constitution, there is something called due process, and actually trying people in the court of public opinion. Is the founders realized that that's a very dangerous place to go. And so when you mentioned earlier about helping the police officers, what I heard you say is you're helping them make sure that they're adhering to the things of the Constitution that protect people or different, you know, new laws that may have been put in place to protect people's rights. And I at least that's what I heard, Tim McCormick.
Absolutely. You know, due process is a completely fundamental aspect of any kind of criminal procedure or proceeding, if you will. And it's very important. It's not only in the Constitution, but it's something that you as a prosecutor have to abide by. You know, there's situations where, you know, you get a horrific case. Maybe you have personal or emotional feelings about that, but you have to set that aside and prosecute the case and give that individual the due process necessary under the Constitution for, of course, the state of Colorado and the United States Constitution. And it's a very important part of our criminal justice system, and everybody's entitled to that.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about Atlanta and these activist DAs, and I first realized this 4 years ago with the race out in Jefferson County, that in fact George Soros was pouring all kinds of money into the campaign for one particular candidate. And as I did more research, found out that George Soros was playing in, I think, 12 other races and was pretty successful. Didn't win the one out in Jefferson County, but did win many of these DA races. And now here we fast forward 4 years later, and we can see what has happened to these communities with these activist DAs. So speak to that, Tim McCormick.
Well, and that's true, you know, and that's the issue that I think a lot of people have, is this undue influence, monetary, financially, if you will, this undue influence in these DA's races, because you have an individual or a group of individuals or a group, period, that's trying to influence the criminal justice system, you know, in a way that doesn't adhere to public safety at all. And when you know, I have a very grassroots campaign. My fundraisers aren't held in gated communities or big mansions in Adams or Broomfield counties or downtown Denver, you know, mansions, hotel rooms, stuff like that. I mean, this is a ground and pound campaign. We're very humbled and honored by the number of people that have assisted us, that have contributed to our campaign. And it really is, again, about the rule of law, standing up for public safety and providing that due process. And quite frankly, you know, you asked me earlier, why me? People can trust me. They can trust me to do the right thing in every case and every time. I've been a member of that community for 20 years. I've raised my kids out there. They've gone to public schools. We still live there. I care about that community. This is not a stepping stone for me to launch a political career or for future political office. I'm running because I have a firm belief that I can fix the issues that are out there. I can return integrity and credibility back to that office. And I will lead it in a manner that people will be proud of, and that they know that they can be secure and safe when they get out in the morning to go to work and get in their car and look around their neighborhood, and they can feel safe, their neighbors can be safe, and know that their community's safe. And when you get this, you know, political backing, if you will, this activist backing, I think you see the results that are going on around the nation. You know, we talked about the Atlanta DA, you know, now the... And these are all hot button topics. I get that. You know, not everybody's not, you know, in agreement on one side or the other. They're open for a lot of interpretation. But you look at St. Louis, where I believe the McCloskey family, who's a husband and wife, they're a lawyer, and they were, you know, went viral, I guess is the word, but they're made famous by coming out with their firearms, with this group that was protesting on their way to the mayor's house, and, you know, and I think a lot of things get lost in that, but, you know, they broke down a barrier to get into this community. And, you know, depending on which side you believe, they're threatening, they were being threatened. And of course, you know, under the Second Amendment, you know, I'm a firm supporter, 100% support the Second Amendment. You have absolutely every right to defend yourself, your loved ones, you know, third person, property, et cetera. And I think they were absolutely, based upon what I've seen, exercising that particular right. And yet the district attorney there, a lady by the name of Kim Gardner, who's a Democrat, is and was elected in 2016, is now investigating them for, you know, I'm not sure, maybe harassing or menacing, if you will, this group of what she called peaceful protesters. Well, you know, Kim, you and I have had this conversation before. When you look at all this property damage and destruction downtown, there's nothing peaceful about that. Absolutely, the First Amendment guarantees you the right to peaceable assembly. I have no problem with that. I think it's great. I think that's an awesome way for people to go out and kind of express either their discontent or their support of certain
constitutional rights.
Yeah, constitutional rights. Thank you. But you know, when you turn that into looting and property destruction and fires and assaultive behavior, that's not First Amendment stuff anymore. So here, you know, this attorney, this district attorney, and you can do the research. She's had issues with the city. She's had issues with law enforcement. She's got issues with the attorney general for the state of Missouri. And now she's looking at, you know, charging those people.
Sounds like she has issues.
Yeah. And then when you dig deeper, lo and behold, she was also funded in her campaign by, you know, George Soros and his super PAC.
So let's talk just a little bit about that, okay? Sure. Because I think people are waking up regarding Second Amendment rights when people are actually protecting themselves and their property, and I'm with you. Peaceful protesting, you know, right to assembly, that is also important. But then there's some ne'er-do-goods out there that then they hide behind it and they say, well, we were just peacefully protesting. But wait a minute. You destroyed property to get to that point. And so the idea that people would not be able to protect their property, that should strike fear across your political spectrum out there.
Right. And you know, to be clear, you can't, if somebody's breaking into your car, you can't, of course, run out onto your driveway and shoot them to defend that car, all right? I mean, that there has to be a threat that's to you, to your house, that type of property. If they're in your car like that, you know, my suggestion would simply be to call the police, take as many pictures as you can. But, you know, understand that concept of self-defense is absolutely a right under the Constitution. And one thing I always laugh at is that, you know, the same group, you know, several months ago was, oh, you know, you don't need a gun, you can call the police. Well, now they're advocating for defunding the police, so, you know.
What's that going to look
right,
like?
That's not going to look good at all. And I absolutely exercise my Second Amendment rights, as does my family, and I absolutely support that 100%.
Okay, let's talk about some other activist DAs. What is happening, and someone sent a piece to me regarding the Ferguson effect that Heather McDonald had written. Mm-hmm. And that is what has happened in the inner cities of many of these different metropolitan areas that have these activist DAs. Let's think about it. When you've got thugs that are running rampant, the McCloskeys, that was interesting to see that whole thing. But what if you're that mom in an inner city and the thugs are going by? You know, there's a lot of that breaks my heart about what's going on in the inner cities.
It certainly does. And, you know, knock on wood, at least to this point, you know, that hasn't necessarily hit our metro area, that type of carnage, if you will, when you see almost weekly reports coming out of Chicago and now, of course, New York and some of these other cities. But, you know, here, I do think we have a collaborative relationship, if you will, you know, with law enforcement that knows those areas and goes in to protect them. You know, that's interesting because in those particular cities, there has been a marked outcry for defunding police or even outright abolishing those. And all of a sudden now you're seeing that increase, significant increase in that type of violent crime and homicides and assaults using firearms. You know, you take a look at New York, before they had, I believe they call it the anti-crime corruption plainclothes unit, right? And of course that got disbanded. And as soon as that gets disbanded, you know, they kept a lid on a lot of this stuff and were able to solve and prevent a lot of this type of crime. And now all of a sudden that's just skyrocketed in terms of shootings and homicides. And we're not there yet, and I hope we're not there yet. You know, they just passed the law enforcement integrity bill here in Colorado, HB, I think, 2217. And in its original form, absolutely, that caused a lot of concern,
sure,
the way that it was. But I think by the time it got narrowed down, it's workable, for sure. I think it will have an impact on law enforcement. Unfortunately, I think a negative impact, and we may or may not see that for the, you know, until another year or two as we go along. But when you look at this activism or whatever you want to call it in these other cities that are basically hamstringing officers in terms of how they investigate or how they're treated or how they're supported. Yeah, you're going to end up with that type of stuff. If you know, I mean, think about this for a minute. Let's kind of maybe step away from reality. Let's say we go ahead and defund and just stop. You know, no more police department. Just, you know, police department for jurisdiction A, you're out. Can you imagine the vacuum that's created for that? I mean, you know, and who's going to fill that? Is it going to be, you know, gang members? Is it going to be, you know, street gang members? Is it going to be, you know, patriots? I don't know. But, you know, the indication that we've seen so far is that it's not going to be good people that go and do that. So that's why it's almost ridiculous to even have this conversation about defunding. Now, I say that, and I'm sure I'll get some blowback on it, but again, I'm for reform. I do think we're at a point where we've asked officers, law enforcement, men and women, first responders, to really do too much. I think we need to take a look at that and get them back to policing, right? I mean, and I say that, and the examples I've been using is, you know, just because your neighbor's dog is barking and you're mad about that, is that something you call the police for, to have them come over and deal with the barking dog? You know, no, there's got to be other, you know, animal control, things of that nature. You know, the fireworks, we just had the 4th of July, a lot of patriots out celebrating. I thought it was great in our particular neighborhood. We had, you know, it was great. We had great displays, enjoyed it. It was fine. Yet, you know, you look at the local law enforcement's numerous phone calls, you know, to come out and stop this, the noise and things like that. So on the one hand, these people are talking about, oh, we got to defund the police. But then on the other hand, they're still calling them, talking about that kind of stuff. And is that really something that you want your law enforcement to go out and have to deal with? And I think there's an avenue to have, again, you know, discussions, meaningful discussions about perhaps, you know, different community representatives go out and handle that. I read an article, and I didn't get to totally digest it, but there's a program up in Eugene, Oregon, called the CAHOOTS, CAHOOTS, Crisis Active Something kind of team. And I read it, and I thought, boy, that's a great idea. And what they do is, when there's those types of situations, or there's a police call on a homeless issue, maybe mental health issue, drug addiction issue, the dispatcher says, okay, this is something that can go to the program versus something where the officers need to do. And this van is equipped with a medic, a nurse, a social worker, some psychology, right? Because studies have shown that, you know, when law enforcement arrives and somebody's going in a mental episode or has an addiction issue, that there's a potential for it to rise, right? To increase to a violent encounter, where these people can go in and they can defuse the situation, treat that person or get them the help necessary and go on. And then you don't involve the law enforcement. You save them for what's really necessary on that. And I certainly think that's something to look into.
Well, and what you mentioned about the barking dog, you know, these are really first world problems. I remember when I was on city council in my community, and apparently there had been calls that the trash truck arrived too early and it was just too noisy. And I'm like, gosh, this is, if this is what we're concerned about, this is a really good thing. And I was on my homeowners association, and people would call me about their neighbor's barking dog. And I'm like, just talk to your neighbor. Just talk to your neighbor. Tim McCormick, we have just a few minutes left. And a word that I continue to hear is that you bring the words integrity to the office. So I'm asking, is there been an integrity challenge with the DA in the Adams and Broomfield 17th Judicial District?
Well, Kim, what I can tell you is that I'm aware of other types of incidences that have occurred within the current district attorney's office for the 17th Judicial District. And because of those instances or incidents, there is an understandable lack of trust. And my objective as a district attorney is to restore that trust and integrity and leadership to that office, you know, so that public safety for our communities is, again, the top priority. I'll tell you this, all right, there will be no place in my administration for any individual in the office who contributes to or has contributed to betraying the trust of our communities through their lack of integrity or an unethical decision-making process. You know, I'm confident in my abilities that I can fulfill these mandates, you know, and improve that community trust. I mean, I've done it for 28 years. I've done it for 17 years out in Adams County and across the board. And if I can, I'd like to put in a little bit of a plug. I've been endorsed by a number of people and organizations. This includes people from all parties, Republican, unaffiliated, Democrat. I've had unanimous support from the FOP lodges in Adams and Broomfield County, as well as the state FOP. I'm very proud of that. Now, you know, people are automatically going to go, oh, well, you know, he's got unanimous support, and therefore he's in their back pocket. That couldn't be farther from the truth. As we discussed earlier, if anybody's going to hold them accountable, it's going to be me. But that doesn't mean that I can't have a relationship where I can work with them to make their communities better. And understand, these are men and women first responders in these communities that have worked with my opponent for the last few years, and they recognize that there needs to be a change. They know that something else has to be different up there. When I talk about Democrats, I've been very fortunate. Bob Grant was a former DA up there in Adams County, a longtime resident of the community. He hired me back in 1999 with that office, and he's endorsing me. Craig Truman is a defense attorney here in town, very well respected, highly thought of. He's endorsed me as well. I've been fortunate to have endorsements from city councils, Brighton, Mayor Greg Mills, Clint Blackhurst, who used to be the former chief of police with the Brighton Police Department. He's a Democrat. You know, in Westminster, Rich Seymour, Lindsay Smith, Dave DeMott, Adam Mikowski in Thornton, Jan Kuhlman, the mayor of Thornton, and Ben Huseman, the mayor of Commerce City. So we're very, you know, and former sheriffs, Doug Dar, Mike McIntosh, Jeff Schrader, the current sheriff out in Jefferson County. So, you know, we have people from across the political spectrums that probably discussing politics would have very robust arguments, right?
Right.
But they're all in agreement that there needs to be change out there, and that I'm the person that can deliver that change.
Okay. So just to clarify, you had been with the 17th Judicial District for 17 years, is that correct?
Yeah, 17 for 17.
Okay, and then where are you at right now?
I am currently working as a prosecutor in the Jefferson County District Attorney's Office. That's the first judicial district attorney's office where District Attorney Pete Weir is the DA.
Okay. And so to just connect the dots, your opponent is currently in this DA's office where it sounds like there are some integrity issues. And so I would imagine that this person would have had the opportunity to address those issues, did they?
Well, I can't speak to him, excuse me, him personally and what I've seen, but I can tell you that for the last 3 years he was appointed as a supervisor in the office by the current DA, who's a Democrat, and of course he's running as a Democrat, and for the last 3 years he's been part of the decision making hierarchy in that office. And as a former individual that worked in that office, that was in that position, I know the extent of input and ability you have to go up and not challenge, but to voice your your concerns or your position on particular things. And, you know, I mean, you can look at the last 3 years or 4 years of what's gone on in that particular office and not, haven't heard anything. Okay. You know, I mean, one of the concerns you have to look at too is in just in the last maybe 4 to 5 years, you know, you've had the integrity issue, you've had the scandal plague mismanagement of that facility. You've also had a near 75%, think about this, near 75% employee turnover rate in that office. That's across the board. Investigators, diversion, attorneys, support staff, you know, victim witness. That's a lot of turnover.
It is.
When you look at, you know, metro areas and you compare it locally, you know, offices sometimes will go in spurts, right? No turnover, and then you have a little bit. But this has been a consistent issue. You're losing that lack of institutional knowledge. You're losing that ability to train and to keep people, you know, in the job and you know, lasting down the road. And, you know, you don't have to take my word for it. I can tell you that I've been approached by a number of members of the defense bar, which is interesting, telling me about the concerns
because
that they
have. Because you prosecute, yeah. And they're the defense side. Yeah. Okay, got it.
They you know, you kind of sit there and think, well, you know, your job is to zealously represent your client. And I think sometimes you fall in this trap where it's like, well, you want to get your client the best deal. And a lot of them have told me that, it, you know, not a yes, but they also enjoy that art of negotiation. And when they go in there and they're confronted with somebody who's either not prepared or not experienced or doesn't know, you know, the facts of the case, and it's a leadership on down issue, that concerns them. Plus, you know, a lot of these folks live in the community of Adams and Broomfield, and they're
concerned. Their community safe, yeah.
Yeah, their communities, they want them safe too. They know, right? And I've, like I said, I've worked hard with defense attorneys over the last 20 plus years, and I respect what they do. They got a difficult job, you know, but I respect what they do, and I certainly appreciate them, you know, lending that type of support.
Well, in Tim McCormick, everybody wants their communities to be safe. And it's very important, these DA races that we have going on here in Colorado. You are running for the 17th Judicial District DA there in Adams and Broomfield County. And where can people get more information about you?
Well, thanks, Kim. Yeah, they can go to my website, www.mccormick, McCormack, 4DA, that's FORDA.com, McCormackForDA.com. There's email, there's, you can join us on Facebook if you'd like, and Instagram, and follow us along that way. Absolutely. And there's also contact information on there and a phone number. I have no issues talking to anybody. Then when you call, you're not going to get an automation or you're going to get me.
I like it. Well, Tim McCormick, thank you so much for joining Sounding Off with Kim Munson today.
Well, thank you, Kim. This has been a true pleasure, and I enjoy this. This was a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Well, great. So this is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.